Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. The American Lung Association has often reported that central Pennsylvania has some of the most polluted air in the country. A new report called Trouble in the Air from the organization Penn Environment reinforces that the region, which is thought of as mostly rural, has dirty and unhealthy air, especially particulates in the air. Joining us to talk about the report is Stephanie Wine. She's the water and conservation advocate with Penn Environment. Ms. Wine, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me.
If you have a question or a comment, give us a call. 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@wytf.org. You can leave a question or a comment on WITF's Facebook page, on Twitter. We are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. I'm going to start with the broadest question of all. What's the big takeaway from the Trouble in the Air report?
The biggest takeaway is that most Pennsylvanians live in parts of the state where they have 1 out of 3 to 1 out of 2 days of their year where there is degraded air quality and they're breathing in pollution. And so what we see is that there's unsafe levels of both particulate and smog, not only in our big cities like Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, but a lot of the smaller cities around the state and even in our rural areas.
So when you say degraded air, how would you define degraded air?
There's a lot of different types of air pollution. Our study looked particularly at two types, so smog and particulate matter, and looked at how many days those were above what the EPA considers little to no risk. So if your listeners are familiar with, there's yellow days and orange days and red days, for example, today is an orange alert in central Pennsylvania, which means that vulnerable populations like children and the elderly and people with asthma or compromised lung function should really be careful. So we looked at yellow and above. Days where there was some level of particulate matter or ozone that caused some level of either short or long-term risk.
And when you're talking about those color ratings, those come from the Environmental Protection Agency.
But they do.
But talk about today, when you say that today is an orange level here in central Pennsylvania, what's that mean?
So orange means that there is an acute, a short-term risk for folks with either young children, the elderly, or individuals with asthma or, you know, COPD, some sort of compromised lung function, and that today's a day that they should be careful. This isn't necessarily a day to go out for a run in the heat of the day. People might want to take it easy, seek air conditioning or a place with filtered air. And what our study looks at, and usually when we talk about bad air days, we think orange and above. We think those days where on the radio and on television in the morning, there's an announcement that today is a quote unquote, you know, dangerous air alert. And what we wanted to look at is not just those days, but the days where there is lower levels of ongoing chronic pollution that can cause health problems, not just in the short term, not just, you know, you won't feel it in your lungs today, but can cause health problems over the longer term.
And let's talk a little bit about that. When you say cause health problems in the longer term, I was curious, and you kind of described this when you said that people who are at risk should be careful. You talked about not jogging, so I imagine you mean not a lot of strenuous activity outdoors.
Yeah.
Finding air conditioning. So does the heat contribute to this?
The heat does contribute, and that's one of the reasons you see more bad air days in the summer. And the way that works, especially for smog, which is one of the types of pollution we looked at in the study, smog is formed when nitrogen oxide, which is caused by burning fossil fuels like coal, oil, and gasoline, meets volatile organic compounds, which can evaporate from gasoline, which can come off of lots of industrial solvents, from paints. They're in a lot of consumer products. And those chemicals together, when combined with sunlight, that causes the reaction that forms smog or ground level ozone. When folks think of ozone, they generally think of the ozone layer.
Right.
Way up at the top of the atmosphere, it protects us from UV radiation. Up there, ozone's a great thing. Down here, at ground level, when we're breathing in ozone, it can actually cause irritation on our lungs that's functionally similar to a sunburn. in our lungs. And so the reason you have more smog formation in the summer is because those volatile organic compounds, they evaporate more quickly in warm weather. And so you have more smog formation on those hot, hot summer days. And when I was, you know, listening leading into this show, some of the recommendations that came along with today's Orange Air Alert were to not gas up your car in the middle of the day. And, you know, one of the reasons is that when there's that gas that escapes when you're filling up your car, and that's releasing volatile organic compounds, and it's leading to that smog being formed in the region.
So actually just putting gasoline in your car at the height of the day, the heat of the day, can, when you think about millions of people doing it, can cause a problem.
That can be, that it's one of dozens of hundreds of places that volatile organic compounds sort of pervade our daily life, but that's a really common one.
You talked about how it is identified, like when you hear a weather report in the morning that today is, it could be a dangerous air day. Very often you hear it referred to as an ozone action day.
Yeah.
And I think you're right that a lot of people, when they hear that, they think, oh, the ozone level, that there's some kind of problem with it. But you have described what the difference is. So today is actually, if there are those who describe it as an ozone action day, this is one of them.
This is a day that we're having that level of pollution.
Okay.
At the ground level.
You said earlier that one of the things you wanted to do with the report was look beyond the orange levels, the days that are described as potentially dangerous. One of the things I noticed in the report is that you said that levels of air considered good or moderate by the EPA can still be unhealthy.
Yeah. And what I think what's interesting is that so the level that the EPA sets for what is concerning to them is actually slightly higher than the World Health Organization. And so what we did is we took the World Health Organization's level and used that for this report. And the reason we did that is because, especially in the last couple of years, there's been a lot of research coming out that shows that really, you know, no level of pollution is healthy, and it all affects us on some level. And so on days of acute air pollution, I know I can feel it in my lungs. There's days, Philadelphia, we've had a bunch, that's where I'm from, we've had a bunch of alert days in Philadelphia in the more classic sense. You know, you walk out in the morning and you can kind of feel it. I have a sister with asthma, and, you know, those are the sort of days that you know, she tells me that she can really, really feel it in her lungs. But then this sort of yellow level, that has more long-term effects. There was a study just last year of Medicare patients that over time, Medicare patients, so that is the, you know, the elderly folks that are a little more vulnerable to air pollution in the long term, that there was increased rates of premature death. There were increased rates of heart problems. There was increased rates of stroke when they were in an area that had more continuous low-level pollution days. So those yellow days where the EPA is saying, it's calling them moderate and acceptable, but actually over time it builds up and that there is an impact.
Mm-hmm. You talked a little bit about the smog or the ozone action days, as some would describe it, but where central Pennsylvania and Pennsylvania overall seems to really be one of the worst places in the country is in particulate matter. What is particulate matter?
So particulate matter it's small particles. And they can be of many, many different types. They can come off of industrial processes. They can, small particles are released from the combustion of fossil fuel. There's a lot of different sources of small particulates. And we actually looked at, it's to get a little wonky, PM2.5, which is
That's more than a little wonky, by
the way. fair. Guilty. So that means what that is just a very, very, very small particle, small enough that it can actually go through your lungs and enter your bloodstream. And so that is the size of a particle that actually can cause that. Then you're really talking about cardiac implications and damage to the cardiovascular system. And there's even emerging research that these very small particles, when you're breathing them over time, can lead to, and we reference this in the report, increased rates of dementia.
So Lancaster County in particular, I know, okay, I'm using the term in particular, seems to have a real issue with this particular matter. But Central Pennsylvania overall, Harrisburg, Carlisle, York, the whole Central Pennsylvania region, why this region is... Most people know this is considered a rural region. Yes, we have some cities, small cities in this region, but we have a lot of rural areas. This is not Philadelphia. This is not Allegheny County in Pittsburgh. Why Central Pennsylvania with particulate matter?
This is one of those places where the report poses as many questions as it answers. So, yeah, when you look at Lancaster, at Lebanon, at Harrisburg, you see smog levels slightly higher, but comparable to the rest of the state. And then those particulate levels, the PM2.5 levels, they're pretty high. And it's difficult to, because we're looking at just the size of a particle. They don't carry on them geolocators that go back to some specific factory. Unfortunately, it would make our job a lot easier if they did. But there's a couple things that it could be that we sort of think might be the case. For example, the geography of the state, the way that if you are driving west from, you know, the New Jersey line to the capital and continuing on towards Altoona, you sort of the mountains rise up out of the rolling hills, and geography can play a big, big role in holding particulate matter in place. And so not all of that might necessarily be being generated in Lancaster or Lebanon or Allentown itself. It could be coming from the, you know, big industrial sites of Philadelphia and of Wilmington and of New Jersey.
It's being bad. We're downwind.
In some ways, yes. And so, you know, and you see this also in Western Pennsylvania that generates a lot of its own pollution, but also imports some from Ohio. And so that's actually one of the reasons that federal action on air is so important, is because it doesn't just affect your own backyard. If there's pollution in one city, there's no guarantee it's actually going to stay there. And so there's a lot of factors that lead to pollution, everything from the weather that day. There's phenomenon that can either clear pollution or hold it in place, the geography, and then, of course, the pollutants themselves. And so that it's a really, really complicated set of factors.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. Our guest today is Stephanie Wine, water and conservation advocate with Penn Environment. We're talking about a new report just released yesterday called Trouble in the Air, talking about the air pollution in central Pennsylvania, and the country overall. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or a comment on WITF's Facebook page, on Twitter. We are at Smart Talk WITF. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Let's take a call from Lee in Lancaster. Lee, you're on the air.
Thank you. I just had a question. You know, in comparison between different geographical regions, like how does Lancaster compare to some place like Beijing, China, in air quality?
You know, and Lee, before you go, there are so many people who think of Beijing right off the bat, because we see so many people in Beijing wearing those face masks, and we've seen photographs of the smog hanging over the city. Thank you very much for your call. I think he's trying to get a good sense of how polluted Lancaster's air is.
That's a really good question, and thanks for that. So I'm not suggesting that residents of Lancaster should walk around with a mask on. We do have better air in Lancaster than there is in Beijing. And I know that there a big problem there is smog, and our smog levels in Lancaster are certainly better. I don't know Beijing's particulate pollution levels specifically off the top of my head. I do know that they're pretty high because they also do have a lot of heavy industry there. But one of the reasons that, you know, when I look at the pictures of air pollution in China, they look a lot like pictures of American cities in the 50s and the 60s. And the reason that we've been able to make progress, and air in the U.S. has gotten better, and we acknowledge in this study that what this is a show of how far we have to go still, but we have made great progress, and we should recognize that. But it's in part because we have things like the Clean Air Act, because we have things like the Environmental Protection Agency. Those are the reasons that our big cities don't look like Beijing or Shanghai. They don't look like the pictures of Pittsburgh and of York from the 50s. But that is in danger. You know, this report actually comes out as President Trump and his administration has actually moved to weaken several key components of the Clean Air Act that are responsible for a lot of the progress that we have made, whether they're vehicle emission standards or the ability to monitor a lot of the industries that cause a lot of these pollution, these sources of pollution. And so what we can't do is take for granted how much progress we've made. And we would say that no day with pollution, even at the chronic levels, is a good one. And so we need to make sure that we're not only protecting the progress that we've made so far, but we're working to expand those protections and really seriously take on not only the sources of pollution that we think of, like, you know, big polluting smokestacks, but that we're going for the vehicle emissions and that we're specifically addressing climate change. Because as I mentioned, the heat itself is part of creating some of these forms of pollution. And so we actually really need to tackle climate change.
Whether you want to or not, you've just discussed a political issue.
I know.
You mentioned the Trump administration has cut back on some regulations that some see as weakening the Clean Air Act. The Trump administration pulled out of the Paris Climate Accords, only country in the world that has done that, that agreed to it. But you also mentioned China, kind of tying all these things together. There are many people, first of all, who would say that we know that there are certain people in the administration would say that climate change does not exist. They will not acknowledge that is an issue. So there's one challenge that those who are fighting for clean air, clean water face. That's one thing. The other thing, you mentioned China. There are those who have argued that it would put the United States, if we do what you're recommending, would put the United States at an economic disadvantage, especially compared to China, which doesn't have laws, environmental laws, as strong as the United States.
And that's where I think what we're missing is the switch that's actually happening in China right now. They have their population is really fed up with the air quality. And it's now at the point where it actually is quite a cost for them to do business because it's an enormous draw on their health system. And there's international companies that don't want to relocate employees to cities that function like smoking two packs of cigarettes a day. And so in the last couple of years, we've actually seen major, major moves by the Chinese government to move towards clean air. And so that's things like there was even a driving ban during the Olympics because it was impossible for a lot of athletes to compete with that sort of air quality.
Well, plus they didn't want the rest of the world seeing,
and they didn't want the rest of the world to see that. But following that, we've actually seen they are investing in a really big way in renewable energy. And so, you know, so a lot of the newest billionaires in China are those in the renewable energy sector. And so, you know, they are, and it's later than we'd like, and after things got a lot worse than we'd like, but they're actually moving towards renewable energy. They are moving towards working to clean up the mess that they've made. And so we shouldn't, and since when does the United States use other countries as an excuse to not clean up our own backyard? And that's why the flip side, we can't just talk about air pollution without talking about energy and about climate change, because a lot of these sources they're one and the same. The things that cause smog today are the same things causing climate change in the long term. It's vehicle emissions, it's coal-fired power plants. And so that's why, you know, Penn Environment is supportive of, you know, not just making sure that we're monitoring air pollution and that we have strong emission standards, but that we're really investing in the renewable economy that we know Pennsylvania can have.
But, and I don't want to get into political discussion, but let's face it, in many people's eyes, this is a political discussion, and we'll see Penn Environment's environmental group. Oh, they have, no, I'm talking like someone who would be a critic, put it that way.
Of course.
That they have an agenda. It's going to cost us money. You know, what, you know, people are living, you know, there's, what evidence do we have that this is impacting people's health? What do you say to that?
I think that there's, There's enormous cost to not dealing with this. When you see increased rates of youth asthma and you have kids who can't go to school and have to stay home and their parents have to take off work because they're having asthma attacks, there are millions of missed school days every year because of children's asthma attacks. When we see the long-term health impacts, whether that's cardiovascular implications, problems with heart health, whether that's the increased prevalence of breathing problems, of pneumonia, that has a real cost to our economy, where people either they're not working and they can't show up at work, or it's a cost to the healthcare providers or their families that are caring for them.
But the problem, Stephanie, is just what you said earlier. If you could trace it right back, those particulates right back to their sources, you could say, here's evidence this is happening. But unfortunately, you can't do that. So you have someone who's in a position of power to make changes that way, say, well, how do we know that that's causing that?
And what I like to clarify is we can't say that any individual particulate matter came from any individual power plant or any individual factory. What we can say is that the result of trends overall. And so if you want to reduce the number of bad air days, we need to reduce emissions overall. We need to reduce individual, all the sources of pollution, not an individual bad actor.
Daphne in Camp Hill has some suggestions. Daphne, you're on the air.
Oh, I'm happy to make my suggestions. And I've done this before, but they need to be heard again. One of my big peeves is the blowing machines. They blow the leaves and the grass around, you know. And those things, a lot of them are gas-powered. So I see even the professional people, they're blowing the grass, you know, like a few pieces of little grass right into the middle of the street, and they consider that they've cleaned up the place. I mean, you know, you could just use a broom and clean it up and put it in the recycling or something. Also, another thing we could do is when people go to get a hamburger or something or an ice cream, they should go inside and turn off the engine instead of sitting in a long line with all these cars running and all the gas, you know, going into the air. And another thing, I've seen so many people, like if the wife is shopping at the grocery store, the man is outside in the car with the engine running so he can have the air conditioner on. Mm-hmm. Why doesn't he go in the store and sit? You know, those things, are, everybody can stop those kind of pollution, but people are so lazy that they just want to take the easy way out. But, I mean, I'm having trouble with my lungs for several years now. I have trouble with my breathing. I never smoked or anything, but my lungs are sensitive to that kind of stuff.
Hey, Daphne, thank you very much for your call. The points that Daphne makes is even what would be considered little things that we do in our daily lives do contribute to the problem overall. And I have to admit, I sat in the air-conditioned car yesterday while my wife was in the store. I guess I'll admit I shouldn't have done that. No, but you know, the point that she's making is a good one, that very often people don't think about their energy usage and the impact that it's having.
And that's definitely true. And there are a lot of things that an individual person can do to limit their impact. But at the end of the day, we won't be able to solve this problem of chronic air pollution and the health problems that come with it, or deal with the longer term problem of that, you know, honestly, we're already seeing now of climate change by individual actions. You know, no individual consumption choice is gonna make that fix. And so ultimately what we need to do is turn to our leaders. We need to do what we can on our own, but we also need to ask our leaders to take this on seriously and to make sure that we're making sure that we have the strong emission standards and that we're pushing forward on renewables.
Well, we have a caller who asked about your recommendations. Faith is in Lancaster. Faith, you're on the air.
Yes. You. First of all, how could I access this report? It's Penn Environment, and how would you access this report?
Well, I'll tell you what, we'll put a link on our website, WITF.org, that you can do that as well under Smart Talk. But I don't want to steal any thunder from your website.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So please, please go to our website, penenvironment.org, all one word, PENNenvironment.org. There's this report and a lot of other great resources, not only on air, but water and other environmental and public health issues. And then a really cool tool that I would love to direct your listeners to is also you can look at the air quality that the data that we actually use in the report, folks can look at themselves. It's a neat little tool to play with, epa.gov/outdoor-air.quality-data. And you can actually look at, in past years, how many of these bad air days are in your region, and really get a sense of the local story for you.
Thank you very much for your call, Faith. We're running out of time for this portion of the program. A couple callers had questions. Suzanne in Carlisle said she's concerned about the air pollution in Carlisle due to the truck traffic. There are a lot of truck stops, a lot of warehouses, I-81, one of the most heavily traveled interstates in the country. Do you know of any plans for improvement for trying to reduce the level of pollution from truck traffic where it is so heavy?
Yeah, and you're not going to change the truck routes, and I don't think you'd want to. What we need is stronger emission standards for heavy vehicles. That's one of the things that we've seen the current administration move against, and we sort of support, we support not only keeping but expanding the emission standards for heavy duty vehicles. And that's because, you know, communities like yours that are on these major trucking thoroughfares, and I'm on one too, they see the impacts when it comes to the smog and the emissions that are coming from these trucks.
So what are some of the other recommendations?
So there's emission standards is a big one. And we also need to look at the stationary sources of pollution. And so that's coal plants, gas plants. Those are also major sources of pollution, and strengthening their emission standards. But ultimately, the long-term strategy is to move away from sources of energy that create this pollution in the first place. You know, we have available, and the report lays this out, we have available sources of energy that don't create air pollution. We have wind and solar, and we have tremendous potential in the state. And so we need to move to those sources, and then we need to move increasingly to vehicles, to efficient vehicles, but ultimately electric vehicles that will draw from that clean grid.
By the way, Tom in Harrisburg mentions that when he listens to Smart Talk in a driveway, he shuts off the car. So Tom is a good example for us.
We're having an impact already.
Well, number one, he listens to the show, so but he turns off the car. So Tom is a responsible citizen.
Thank you, Tom.
Stephanie Wine is the water and conservation advocate with Penn Environment. We do have a link to the report on our website, WITF.org. Stephanie, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me on.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. Police in Pennsylvania are cracking down on distracted and aggressive drivers as part of a new initiative. It's called the Aggressive Driving and Education Project. Joining us are co-coordinators of the project, Barbara Zortman and Jeff Bowman, Region 2 Law Enforcement Liaison for the Pennsylvania Aggressive Driving Enforcement and Education Project, and Corporal Eric Carter from the Harrisburg Bureau of Police. All of you, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thank Good morning.
You. I need you to move your microphone over there. There you go, yeah. Jeff. If you have a question or a comment, we know that this is one of those topics. There are a lot of people that are interested in safe driving, things they see on the road. Give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or comment on WITF's Facebook page, on Twitter. We are at SmartTalkWITF. You're going to go on Twitter. Make sure you do pull over to the side of the road if you are in your car. That's only good, not only good information, it's to keep you safe as well. 1-800-729-7532. So what is the goal of this initiative?
To reduce aggressive driving behavior, to actually modify it, not just issue tickets and citations, but to actually get people to change their way of driving, slow them down, have them start to think about the fact that they're not alone on the road, that they're sharing the road, and they should be doing it more safely.
But why aggressive driving? I mean, I mentioned distracted driving, too. Where does that come into this?
Well, aggressive driving is, there's 16 different violations, from speeding to not wearing your seatbelt to following too closely, tailgating. There's a lot of violations that go into aggressive driving, which leads to road rage. A lot of people confuse those two things. So we're talking about those violations that lead into not using turn signals, the guys can comment on what they actually see on the roadway, but those are very serious violations, and they are, in my opinion, I use the term selfish driving behaviors, as though you are alone on the road and you're not taking anybody's other's health into consideration.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to jump around on a lot of different topics because there is a lot of things that you're looking to do in this report. And again, I want to hear from the listeners as well, 1-800-729-7532. You know, Jeff Bowman, I hear so many people complaining about distracted driving, about, and they always say the kids who are texting. Now, maybe a lot of young people, but there are some people over the age of 20 who are texting while driving as well. They don't put as much emphasis on aggressive driving like speeding, for example. But let's talk about why do you think it is that so many people tend to focus on distracted driving?
Because it's something that I think that the motoring public themselves, they all see it going on every day. Part of my job as a law enforcement liaison is I travel the 8-county region of southern central Pennsylvania, and every day I see people doing the same thing that we're talking about here. And one of the favorite things I used to say whenever I was a patrol sergeant is that it's not a problem till it's a problem. And I think that's what happens with the motoring public. And any of these bad behaviors, they start to speed, run stop signs, drinking and driving, texting, whatever it is. They do it once and then nothing happens. And then they do it again and nothing happens.
They get comfortable.
Exactly. And then the problem occurs is then somebody suddenly pulls out in front of them and they can't stop and there's a collision. And that's what we're trying to prevent. The program itself is actually, I believe it's been since
2006. 1997, D.C. launched it. And then a couple years later, Maryland and Virginia joined it. And then in 2006, Pennsylvania joined the program.
Why don't you do it all year round?
Because there's money involved, there's funding.
I knew the answer to that question, Barb. I just had to bring it up.
It's not a bottomless pit.
But what does that money go for?
Completely for overtime enforcement of the officers to go out. And we do it in three waves, usually 4 to 6 weeks at a time. We do one in the fall, one in the spring, and one in the summer. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we could do it daily, but these guys, they're out there doing it daily. They are out there enforcing all of those violations. This is just an extra boost. And it also gives us an opportunity to have some heightened awareness. High visibility enforcement, heightened awareness, our media partners such as you guys, fabulous to get that word out. We want people to know that the police are out because we want them, again, to modify their behavior. If they think they have that perception of that risk of being caught, they're going to alter that behavior and hopefully it'll become a habit.
Jeff, I want to go back to, you said that so many people see distracted driving and notice it. But they also see people speeding all the time. But yet, that doesn't seem to have an impact on the number of people who speed.
Absolutely. And once again, it's not a problem until until they can have an incident where they can't get their car under control and they're involved in a crash. They can't negotiate a curve. They can't stop for, one of the biggest crashes that I remember seeing in my days on the street was rear end collisions. And that is clearly attributed to being distracted. Either you're not paying attention or you're driving too fast that you can't bring your vehicle to a stop in an assured clear distance ahead. So those are the things that that I think that is important. And what's a little bit different about traffic enforcement is it affects us all. You know, crime doesn't necessarily affect everybody. Not everybody can say they've been a victim of a crime. Traffic stuff, it affects us all. We all walk, we all drive, and these are the issues that it doesn't differentiate between you being a millionaire or being a homeless person. You could be involved in a traffic crash just because there's not enforcement going on or there's not somebody that's policing themselves. So that's like Barb said, a lot of this is education. And just because there's enforcement going on, we can't kid ourselves and say that we're going to be able to cite our way out of this problem.
Arrest our way out of it, yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. there has to be a component to that, but also there has to be, just like Barb said, with high visibility enforcement. For example, on my commute here this morning, there was a state trooper sitting in the middle of Interstate 81. And as soon as I could tell, because people were slowing down before we got there. So that's
just let everybody know there's.
Sure, that's fine.
Oh, yeah, that is. See, you know, I remember one time way back in my career, I don't think it happens very often now, but we got a release from the state police saying exactly where they were going to be for speed enforcement, what some people call speed traps. Put it on the air, and we got a lot of complaints from listeners saying, why are you doing that? I said, well, the state police put this out there. So, Corporal Carter, let me turn to you. The city is a little bit different in that, I mean, yeah, you have speeding issues, but most of the time the speed limit's 25 or 35 miles per hour. I'm sure you get people going 50, 55, maybe even 60 miles per hour. But let's talk about that distracted driving part of it, though. This is where Jeff had talked about people not paying attention, running into the back of a vehicle, congested. There can be some congestion in the city. What are some of the issues that you see in the city you may not see in the interstate?
Well, to be honest with you, we see such a wide gamut of vehicle infractions that cause a lot of these accidents and unsafe driving. I could sit there and say speeding is the top one, distracted driving is the top one. It kind of mixes and compounds each other. You know, sometimes you'll have speeding with distracted driving as the same cause. Mm-hmm. It's hard to say exactly what the major cause of everything is, but we do a lot of speed enforcement in the city, and unfortunately, the 25 and 35 mile per hour zones. That's a thing of the past to some of these people. We've had them as high as 81.
In the city?
In the city.
Where?
On Front Street.
I can believe that.
And it couples also with a lot of inebriated drivers, whether it's under the influence of alcohol or drugs. We see so much of that. That's like one of the biggest issues I have is not only the distracted driving, but the alcohol and drug-related driving as well. They're putting so many people at risk out there on the streets, and they just don't think about that.
Something else, we had Mayor Papenfuss on the show a few weeks ago. Pedestrians in a city, in an urban atmosphere like Harrisburg, like the other cities in central Pennsylvania, and it just seems as though we have had a lot of pedestrian accidents here in the last year or so.
Yeah, and a lot of that, unfortunately, the areas, you know, even though people automatically jump to conclusions that, oh, it's definitely the vehicle's fault, a lot of times we see pedestrians walking in very low light conditions, very dark clothing. A lot of times in the city, you'll see people just literally walk right out in front of you and not even look. It happens in front of police cars, fire trucks, ambulances.
And they're texting and walking, too.
A lot of them are distracted.
That's another thing, yeah. You see more and more of that. People walking through, hopefully on a crosswalk, but even then, if they're not, walking across the street, being distracted and on their phones.
Correct. And, you know, we see a lot of the pedestrian issues. So, in turn, as part of some of this aggressive driving, we set up our details around areas that have a lot of pedestrian crossings, you know, based on complaints from people and visualizations that we make as police officers on a daily basis. We'll run our aggressive driving details in conjunction with some of these areas to also enforce pedestrian crosswalks, violations from drivers at pedestrian crosswalks. It doesn't fall into the aggressive driving category, but it also helps.
Mm-hmm. I do want to get to the telephone here because we have a few callers. But one thing I wanted to point out, and this is for comparison's sake, but it goes back to what the three of you have mentioned about speed. Statistics from PennDOT, 31,000 speed-related crashes in Pennsylvania in 2017. That resulted in 441 fatalities. Now, as comparison, and this is not to downplay it, 15,600 distracted driving crashes with 58 fatalities. That says a lot. that speed is still the major killer, the major problem of our traffic problems in this state.
It's much easier to identify a speed-related crash with a distracted driving, texting while driving, or whatever you were doing, putting your CD in your player or leaning over for something. Any kind of distracted driving is self-reporting. Very few people, if they get pulled, pull somebody over because they rear-ended someone, very few people are going to say, oh, I was texting.
I'm on my cell phone, yeah.
Yeah, but if they were speeding, it's much easier for that to be, you know,
so you think that's one of the reasons
that's a large statistic.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's the laws of physics. I mean, speed equals distance divided by time, and you can do that through the evidence that you collect at the scene. You can easily say, all right, well, this is a 35 mile an hour speed zone, and the evidence I've collected here indicates to me that this vehicle was traveling at a minimum of 52 miles an hour. Well, that's speeding. Mm-hmm. And that's why that crash occurred.
But Jeff, I want to get back to what we had talked about earlier, and that is almost everyone will go over the speed limit. It's accepted. It's just, you know, what you described about seeing a trooper in the median on I-81, people will slow down. Yes, that does get them to slow down. But as soon as they're a little bit away from that trooper, they're back up over the speed limit again. Why is it that we as a society don't see the danger in driving too fast?
Because it hasn't happened to them. Yeah, that would be my initial action or reaction is that until these things happen to you, until you've been involved in these things, and you get away with these things and these behaviors, it just fosters it and allows you to continue. You think to yourself, "Oh, I'm going to get to work there, and I won't be late, so I'll drive an extra 20 miles an hour of the speed limit." Well, really, that's only going to get you there an extra minute earlier. So the simple answer is to leave a little bit earlier. But I mean, that's society today. We're all in a hurry. We're multitasking.
Corporal Carter, I just saw you look at your watch. You have somewhere to go?
Not yet.
Okay, I want to make sure, because I want to make sure that you don't have to get out of here and drive fast to where you're going.
I'll let you know if I do.
Okay, let's take some phone calls from Randy in Chambersburg. Randy, you're on the air.
Hello, how are you guys today?
We're doing well.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Yeah, just to touch, I've been a paramedic for 25 years, and here are some issues that we see when we go out on the 911 auto accidents, and it's lack of enforcement. First of all, when I grew up, it was a deal of there were state troopers everywhere with radar. Now to see a state trooper with radar, it's very rare, and everyone knows that. So you need to slow these vehicles down with more traffic radar. The other item is focusing on a gender age group. When I grew up, most of the traffic accidents were caused by the boys, young men. Now that's all shifted. What we're seeing now, it's the girls and the young women, mainly with the texting and phone usage. That's a gender shift that we've seen. So I think a lot of it's enforcement. It's sort of like the heroin epidemic. You know, it's lack of enforcement. When medics go out on a heroin overdose and the troopers or even borough police show up, nothing's done. They just leave. Well, we can't do anything about that. So everybody's getting into this mindset, hey, there's no more radar. There's nothing if we get caught for heroin. So it's all focusing on lack of enforcement.
Okay,
and
well,
they can get away with it.
Randy, thank you very much for your call. As a paramedic, I'm sure he has seen a lot of things in 25 years. When he says about lack of enforcement, I mean, that's actually what this initiative is designed to do. I mean, and I'm speaking for you when I say that obviously it's not something you don't want to enforce. It's just resources and being everywhere all the time.
And it's a fine line, what he said. I completely agree. Cops can't be everywhere. It is a matter of funding. It is a matter of manpower. I approach it, not being law enforcement, I approach it as, why should we have to tell you to slow down? Why should an officer, why should a department have to? Why does this money have to be spent? Unfortunately, we have to legislate responsible behavior. So, you know, and then you get to the enforcement level of it. But that's where I come from it, that, yeah, I agree with him. And unfortunately, people are going to continue to do that until we modify that behavior.
Pam is in Harrisburg. Pam, you're on the air.
Yes, I'd like to say, first off, with the city, please time the traffic lights. It is very frustrating, and it really lends to both speeding as well as aggressive driving when you're stopping for every single light, although you're doing 25. Also, on speed, you were saying with enforcement and such, I could do 65 in a 55, still in the right lane, and still have people on my bumper. It is crazy. And my final comment, just to get my two cents in, please, bicyclists, ride with traffic, not again. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your call. Corporate Carter, I hope you know I was only joking with you before, but as far as the red lights go, most of those stoplights are timed, right? But
correct.
The flow of traffic, the amount of traffic probably has an impact on that.
And our traffic engineering department does a great job of keeping the lights up to working standards. They check them often. Obviously, when there's any problems with it, they address it very quickly. Most of our lights are timed in regards to this posted speed limit. If you catch a green light and you're doing the speed limit, typically by the time it would take you to travel to that next light, it has timed through its cycle and will emit a green signal for you. If you're speeding, obviously, you're going to catch every red light because it's just not catching up to the time it would normally take a person to drive a normal speed to change. A lot of our traffic lights out there in the city also have what a lot of people think are cameras on them.
I always thought those were cameras. Yeah.
They're basically, it's a sensor, right? It focuses in on a specific spot on that intersection. When it sees a vehicle there, it goes ahead and puts it through its cycle of changing it. It doesn't record anything. A lot of people are like, oh, well, look at the camera footage. That's not what that does. Mm. It's basically a sensor.
But, you know, in a perfect world, you'd be able to hit every light. But again, traffic has something to do with that.
Correct.
In the city, people making turns, all those kind of things do have an impact. Red light enforcement is part of this initiative. Mm-hmm. Is that an issue in the city?
Of course. That's actually one of the primary reasons we see a lot of our accidents at intersections that are controlled by red lights. A lot of people just, they're trying to get somewhere. They just blow right through it. They're distracted. They blow right through it. You know, and then there's obviously, they're called accidents for a reason. There are accidental times where they just didn't realize it. You know, it happens. All in all, it's a big part of the problems with the red lights, that's for sure.
We only have about 90 seconds left, and I want to thank all of you for being with us today. What message would you like to leave? I mean, obviously, what you're here to do is to make people aware that there are going to be extra patrols out there doing this during this initiative, but what message would you like to leave with people?
One of the big things I would like to say is that according to NHTSA, 94%.
What's NHTSA?
It's the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
Okay.
They're the folks that are responsible for collecting all this data. The whole purpose of our enforcement is right off the bat with what Barb said, is not to generate revenue. It is to decrease crashes and injuries to people. Last year, we had in this 8-county region, we had 21,154 crashes, 187 fatalities. That's 187 people that were lost. That, you know, some of them were from this region, some of them were for not. But the biggest thing that I want to say is that 94% of all crashes have something to do with human error, whether that be speeding, being distracted, drinking and driving, something that was within their control. And so that tells me how much of a problem we have, and we're trying to eliminate it.
Co-coordinators Barbara Zortman and Jeff Bowman, Region 2 Law Enforcement Liaison for the Pennsylvania Aggressive Driving Enforcement and Education Project, The Initiative, and Corporal Eric Carter from the Harrisburg Bureau of Police. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And hopefully that gives a lot of people something to think about, not just in the coming days or weeks, but forever. You know, think about your responsibility on the road as you are driving out there. I am on vacation next week, but we will have guest hosts coming in each day. Dr. G. Terry Madonna, Franklin Marshall College political analyst and pollster, will be here on Monday. And I understand Pennsylvania's Attorney General Josh Shapiro and Auditor General Eugene DePasquale will be with Terry. But Valerie Pritchett from ABC 27, also coming up, Brian Roach from WGAL News 8.